I'd like to give a little bit of an introduction to crop models and how they address cultivar variation or genes, and to illustrate the importance of defining target environments as the climate, soils management, season length. And in this talk, I'll give examples of simulating genetic improvement, single trait responses in terms of feasible range. Also discuss pleiotropy, and I'll try to give an example of that. I'll talk about putting multiple traits together, illustrating additivity of over traits, and then give examples for simulating soybean for future CO2 change in Iowa, peanut in Ghana, where climate change show the additivity and some other features. Also give illustrations of genotype by environment interaction, particularly for chickpea in India, rain-fed versus irrigated, and sorghum in Ghana with low and high nitrogen, again, showing up. And I'll try to explain how and the why some of those genetic G by E environments show up. The dynamic crop growth models can be used to synthesize what we know about plant genetics and physiology, processes, phenology, architecture, to hypothesize yield improvement. Need to do it in defined target environments. And I'm going to illustrate what we consider, as modelers consider, to be genetic coefficients. They're simply a mathematic construct that mimics the phenotypic outcome of genes. Examples would be life cycle phase duration, as in grain filling period, or photoperiod sensitivity, structural aspects that affect light interception, height, node number, vegetative traits like specific leaf area, determinacy, leaf photosynthesis, reproductive traits, grain filling, duration, seed size, and composition, and to some extent sensitivity of processes to temperature and water if you believe cultivars within a species vary. The goal really is to get to link DNA to the field phenotype, but that probably is going to be a decades type long task. These growth and yield predicting models are process level. That is, they consider the balance, the inputs and the losses of carbon, nitrogen, and water. They predict daily growth and development response to daily weather. They integrate over multiple processes, and this is the advantage that you connect to these single process or single gene phenomenon, because what they do is they honor the carbon balance, the nitrogen balance, energy balance, resource limitation. Things aren't free when you consider those limitations. They're based on the soil crop weather relationships that we know and can be used to study genetic improvement and other genotype by environment interactions. In this example, use the crop grow legume model and series sorghum. Now, target environments, you must specify your weather, whether it's historical or future climate scenario, soil, describe the soil characteristics, degraded or good soil or soil organic matter, that type of thing. You describe your management inputs, resource limitations. Are you doing this rain-fed or irrigated or under low nitrogen, high nitrogen? And you even specify crop life cycle before you start because it's a type. So all the plant breeders would call this would be the niche environment or the target. Typically what we do is simulate over multiple years, 20 to 30 years, to sample the weather. And you run a base case versus some change that you made, say 10% change in a characteristic. What's important on this is that you realize the degree to which the model has realism for mimicking that physiological process, mode of action. And you can only vary the traits that the model considers. If you have the model doesn't consider that, you have a limitation in the model. And you should also only vary in the range of reported variables or variation. Now, that's a problem connecting to the literature and measurements. I'll give examples with crop grow with changing rooting, filling period, determinacy, photosynthesis, and nitrogen mobilization, and we'll discuss additivity and genotype by environment interaction. And there are some lessons from crop physiology and AgMet in terms of honoring physical principles. One of these, for example, is that you have to trade CO2 uptake for water vapor going out. That puts a limit on, quote, the gene for drought resistance. You have to balance the energy. The heat load is lost through latent and sensible, and the latent is transpiration. You have to balance the crop's carbon budget. If you send assimilate to the roots for more water uptake, you have less left over for leaves or seeds. And there are pleiotropic issues. I'll give an example of this, where if you can increase single-leaf photosynthesis with thicker leaves. That has a consequence because you've got less light capture. Lessons from genetics is that it's rarely one-to-one. You have single genes to single products. Maybe day length follows that, but the science article by Buchner, I believe is the last name, that there were many genes that gave time to anthesis in maize. And that generally what you have are integrated phenomenon. The outcome of grain yield comes from many quantitative traits, loci or genes, and additivity. It's not simple. You have interaction. But what I'm going to point out is that interaction, you can have a single gene for a single process, maybe positive in one environment, negative in another. And it's an advantage only in certain environments. And the plant breeders would like to think there's maybe two genes involved in gene by E. I think there's just one. I'll give an example of single trait response filling period with soybean in Iowa, where you might consider frost limiting the season or limited rainy season. Now, if you fix the life cycle, you can get longer grain field duration by starting earlier. Earlier flowering, these are the genetic coefficients for this, earlier pod set and seed set. There are consequences. This shows simulated yield response to changing filling period around a reference start point, and here might be a feasible range of plus or minus 10 days. And you can see that you increase grain yield with increasing filling period duration, but it's asymptotic, reaches a limit. The other feature with this is that when you have earlier flowering and earlier grain set, the nitrogen mobilization occurs over a longer period, and you get an advantage from having a stay grain trait that sustains photosynthesis during grain fill. The other point on this is that in the dry years, there was no benefit to longer grain filling duration. Is what happened is that you had shorter vegetative growth, less total root growth, not as deep an exploration, and you actually had more water stress. This is an example of a pleiotropic response. This is grain yield of soybean response to changing photosynthesis if there's no limit, no coupling. The no coupling example. Now, most of the time, the literature on soybeans says you get increased leaf photosynthesis at the cost of having thicker leaves, specific leaf weight or specific leaf nitrogen. That's a pleiotropic linkage because what you get is, yes, higher leaf photosynthesis, but lower LAI. So the response actually tends to be a lot flatter. So here that response is 1 to 2% uncoupled. So this great promise of 10% increase in leaf rate collapsed to 1 to 2%. This is going into some hypothetical variations of traits compared to a baseline at ambient 350 or 500 part per million CO2. This is not ambient, but it's to illustrate the difference. And I'll point out two or three things about this. One is that you start putting traits together, you get additivity with 2, 3, 4 together. That's probably what the plant breeders really did in reality when they selected for grain yield. The other thing to point out here is that certain traits like determinacy, earlier onset or longer grain fill that requires you to start earlier, or thicker leaves, which gives you less leaf area, have pretty small advantages in ambient and actually start bumping up in the elevated CO2, especially when you put them together in combinations of 2 and 3, the bold color. Now, why does that happen? Elevated CO2 gives you more vegetative growth, more leaf area. You have opportunity to start earlier. So this would be the positive spinoff. Now, I think the plant breeders have taken advantage of that already in past history. This is the same kind of example with peanut, with changing some of the same traits, but this is a short cycle, 90-day in Ghana. And you can see we get good response to photosynthesis, later flowering, later maturity, and you put them together and they become additive with higher partitioning. So we're at 16, 20, 25% yield increase. Higher CO2, you still get additivity. Here's a plus 3 degrees temperature, or 3 degrees plus temperature plus high CO2. What's interesting here is that under the high temperature environment, some of those had more benefit. Now, why is that? Because the higher temperature caused shorter life cycle. And it played with the same traits that if you bring the life cycle back, the longer cycle, you're getting the yield improvement, very nice yield increases. This is an example of genotype by environment interaction. And this, you can think of single gene action, beneficial one environment, negative in another. Now, chickpea is grown on stored water in India, in this case sown about the last of October on a very deep soil. Very little rainfall after that, so it's basically terminal compared to irrigated. Now, under that situation, more rapid rooting, small yield increase, slower rooting, a small yield decrease. No effect under irrigated, which you would expect. The other kind of traits, like thicker leaves, higher specific leaf weight, actually improved yield tremendously under the water-limited situation. It was negative under we lost light capture under irrigated. Now, why was that? It's because this was a terminal drought. You had to save the water during the reproductive period, and you did this with lower leaf area. The same thing with later timed anthesis. Gives you more leaf area, and therefore the yield goes down. Under that terminal drought, opposite effect under irrigation. So you would call this genotype by environment interaction, but it's one gene having benefits in one environment, negative in another. The last simulated example will be for sorghum in Ghana with 20 versus 80 kilos of N. And I first point out that we do get additivity of putting several traits together. But here's an interesting one. This is a shorter life cycle. Gives us a negative effect with 80 kilos of N, positive effect under low nitrogen, or the opposite by a longer time to flowering. So what we're getting is the model says interactions. Now, I'm not sure this is in reality, but there are enough of cases we're seeing temperature, water, CO2, nitrogen effects. I'll leave that. So origin of genotype by environment interactions. If you have different life cycles or different phase durations to place the environment in a different place in the life cycle, or if you have a different temperature sensitivity of a process, and the temperature in this environment is different from a second environment, or rooting traits. So if you have water stress, this can express. If there's no water stress, you won't see it, and it might be negative. It also depends on whether the trait is neutral or costly. Constitutive partitioning to more root is actually negative in many environments. And I've done some simulation with Thai researchers showing that water holding capacity, rainfall, temperature lead to this G by E. Now, this is a typical stability analysis, showing that one cultivar responds better in a warm environment, in a high yield environment, than the other. The model in this case was able to pick it up. We had some genetic traits of affecting leaf photosynthesis and fraction of life cycle to seed fill. Another example with tie data on genetic coefficients that had been solved, there was a G by E crossover. We took this apart, and to give you the short example, there were three genetic traits that affected this: seed filling duration, how rapidly we added pods, and partitioning intensity. So here's my conclusion slide. There's excellent potential for crop models to hypothesize genetic improvement and causes of G by E. You can hypothesize traits by sensitivity analysis, look backwards at data, and design idiotypes for target environments. You need realism in terms of, do you have the correct physiological mode of action, and the models need to account for the feedbacks and for the carbon balance, and you need a feasible genetic range as well. These simulations show that we can come up with 20-30% yield improvement with putting traits together, and that G by E interactions come up with differences in CO2, temperature, water, nitrogen. Okay. None. Yes. Fifty or 60 years? Well, I can give you an example. That Williams cultivar is pretty old. It's 30 years ago or more. Okay, and we've actually simulated cultivars in Iowa about 20 years after that, and they approached this 20% higher yield than the Williams. So I think it's a window of 20, 30 years. And the peanut example is the same. We have real data that says longer life cycle in the environment, higher partitioning gives us higher yield. Yes. I think, okay, I'll try to explain the question. With a crop model, you can explore all of the, you know, the whole surface, but in reality, some of them may not exist as traits. And the photosynthesis one might be an example of that. If you said there was no coupling of specific leaf weight and photosynthesis, you would be a little bit in error of looking at this. And we could do that, put them both together, and the model would say thin leaves are good because you capture light, but and then change leaf photosynthesis by itself. That would be a wrong way of looking at this. And I think that your genetic analysis, the fact that you can't find it in reality, might be the clue to the modeler that worry about linkage. Is that covered? Yeah.